already. Is it 10 o'clock? Let's go. Shelley's ready. Okay, I'll go ahead and call order regular scheduled Board of Supervisors meeting on April 29th, 2014. If the audience would join the board in the Pledge of Allegiance, please.
Pledge allegiance to the United States of America and to the Republic for which stands one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Good morning. You notice we're one short this morning, so we'll see if we can muddle through without Supervisor Sanders. So, first is the public comment. This comment period is for the public to address topics on today's agenda. Loris is coming to the mic.
Good morning, Loris Olson, Ames.
Morning.
And when we have, or you have the discussion about the update for the communications plan, I was hoping that maybe Leanne could go ahead and talk a little bit about her time commitments on this and involvement of other staff as it relates to this plan. Thank you.
Thank you. Next is consideration of minutes for 4/22/14 and the special meeting on the 24th.
Move approval of the minutes of 4/22/14 and for the special meeting on 4/24, since it was very brief.
I'll second the motion. Is there any additions or corrections? Clinton?
Aye.
Toot? Aye. The minutes have been approved. Personnel actions, we need to add a new hire for CLP, Shelley Tharp at $10.85 an hour, and there's two temporary hires for the secondary roads for the summer.
Are there any others like utilities or, oh, that's just personnel.
That's personnel, yeah.
Okay. Move approval of personnel action with noted changes.
I'll second. Is there anything additional? Clinton?
Aye.
Toot? Aye. Personnel actions are approved. Consent agenda. Now, there's an addition of a utility permit, 1441
and 1442. 1441 and 1442. Okay. Move the consent agenda with noted changes.
A second. Anything additional? Clinton?
Aye.
Toot? Aye. The consent agenda has been approved. That'll take us down to additional items. Consideration of Resolution 1491, Fiscal Year 14 Appropriation Amendment, Lisa Markley.
Morning.
Morning.
How are you?
I have put before you a appropriations amendment. This appropriates the remaining 5% for the following departments. That's just an adjustment from the budget amendment. For animal control, engineer, veterans affairs, conservation, environmental health, IRVM, information technology, planning and development, juvenile court, and countywide. You've already given the 100% appropriated the 100% for the elected officials. Okay, these departments, from my perspective and math, are going to need the full appropriation, along with the fact that most of them are also getting budget amendments. So that's why I'm recommending it. The departments that are not 100% appropriated, and from my perspective, probably won't need to be, are community services, CLP, human services, building, facilities, justice center, DHS, and mental health. These all should be fine, but we can always appropriate additional dollars if we need to.
As needed. Yep. Mm-hmm. Okay. Good. Unless there are any questions, I would move approval of the appropriation amendments, Resolution 1491.
I'll second that. Is there anything further? Clinton?
Aye.
Toot? Aye. Resolution 1491 has been approved. Next is the discussion of the Fiscal Year 14 Budget Amendment Request. Again, Lisa Markley.
I'm bringing this to you a week earlier than normal because I have every intention of being on vacation next week. So, really. Overall, the amendment request that I put in front of you, the expenditures are being amended by $946,856. There are numerous departments involved. Board of Supervisors has an $11,000 amendment request. Animal Control, I put in a $10,000 amendment request to spend special animal care money. You guys approved a vehicle for animal control, so I'm amending general county betterment for that. Secondary Roads has a bunch of FEMA revenues coming in and expenditures, so they've requested a budget amendment. Conservation is pretty much the same thing, a bunch of FEMA dollars coming in and going out. Environmental Health, you guys approved back in December that there was that she could continue the extra help, and so this is the dollars that are needed to do that. IT had some projects that apparently you guys had discussed, and she asked for an amendment for those. Planning and Development has some additional needs. Juvenile Court, way back at the very beginning of the year, the Toledo Juvenile Home was an issue as far as the amount of money that was being paid there. So I told them that I would go ahead and amend the budget later in the year for that. For countywide, there's some grants that we have some dollars that we did not know we were going to get, so I need to expend those. We've also expended way more in the medical examiner line item than we ever anticipated this year, so we're going to have to put a lot of dollars in there. So overall, that was the 946 in expenditures. In revenues, overall was 898,398. Mainly bringing in grant revenues. There's some fund balances that are being used for some of it. Friends of Animal got a big donation, so I'm amending that in also. It brings your ending fund balances from this amendment, with this amendment for the general and supplemental to about 23%, rural to about 13%, and secondary roads to about 21%. What I would like to do is, obviously this information is out there already. Any questions you might have before I send it to publication or for the public hearing is fine. What I'm planning on doing is sending it to the for public hearing, so it'll be published on the 15th, and we'll have the public hearing on the 27th of May. If you recall correctly, we have to amend the budget at least 30 days before the end of the fiscal year so that there's a chance for staff for public
input.
Do you have any questions?
No, I looked it over earlier and I,
okay.
You know, didn't.
Okay. Next is consideration of sending publication of the paper for public hearing on
5/27. And as I just said, I would be sending that publication on 5/15, so it'll go out next week. So that it'll be in the paper in all three papers on the 15th, and we'll have the public hearing on the 27th.
Move approval of sending publications to the paper for public hearing of 5/27/14.
I'll second that. Any additional? Clinton?
Aye.
Toot? Aye. The publication and the hearing date will be the 27th. Are you done for the day?
I am.
Okay, thank you. Consideration of Resolution 1480, Story County Hazard Mitigation Plan, Keith Morgan.
Good morning.
This resolution is the culmination of our hazard mitigation planning efforts. It is Story County's adoption of the hazard mitigation plan, the strategies that are contained in there for the unincorporated areas. After you adopt it, then our other jurisdictions, to include our school districts, will also need to adopt it. And then we'll be good for 5 years, but I will start the process to get a hazard mitigation planning grant in about a year or so, and we'll begin the process over again. And we also have a requirement to annually update this plan. Any questions? Yes, sir.
I would move approval of Resolution 1480 to approve the hazard mitigation plan.
I'll second that. Is there any additional? Clinton?
Aye.
Toot? Aye. Resolution 1480 has been approved. Thank you, Keith. Discussion and consideration of revising the action steps in the communication plan. Leanne Harder.
I
Morning.
Morning.
I have a few slides to go over with you to walk you through this process. What is before you are the... if you'll recall, in January this year, the Board of Supervisors adopted the Story County Iowa Communications Plan. In that, there are a set of action steps. What staff is bringing before you is a discussion of revising some of the time frames with those action steps, not specifically revising the action steps, just the time frames which are associated with those. Just going... For some reason, it's clicking on and off. I'm going to just walk through each one. If there's a check mark, it's that action step is well underway or it's been completed. First one was a newsletter or an e-newsletter. We have two newsletters. One is county news. That's the internal one to staff and county staff and employees. We did start that in February. Ongoing, actually last Friday, we released the April version. I'll pull that in closer. We released the April version last Friday. That generally goes out around the 28th of each month. Our story is the more general newsletter that goes out to employees receive it, of course, but on the website, different venues. That's distributed quarterly. In towards the end of May, we'll be compiling that. But we've already done the February one and then again August and November. Going into public information training, that was intended to do brown bag luncheon series to county employees only. That was scheduled to begin bimonthly in February and April. Thus far, we've not been able to successfully schedule it. This is one of those revisions I would recommend that we just start in June. Working with the wellness committee, there are some ideas that have been put forward, and I think those would be able to go for June, August, October, and December. And then the tips and tricks section of county news, just how do you put a PowerPoint together? How do you do a press release? That's what that was intended. That would then begin in May, a couple of times beginning in May. And that would be a revision rather than begin in February, begin in May. Create single repository for department newsletters and publications. That's ongoing. We made some modifications to a website. It's still a matter of reaching out to different departments and elected officials to get a full picture of what's being released to the public and how do we consolidate it. That ties in with our ongoing review of our website. Distribution lists shared and centrally accessible. This is item number four. Shortly after the plan was adopted in January, emailed department heads and elected officials and followed back a couple times. And really, there's not everyone has their own, and so I'm still working to compile and create one master list. The list is generally there, but as far as making it accessible on the S drive, which is our shared internal drive, it needs scrubbed a little bit more. So that would be May. That would be rather than April. Identify new methods of community engagement. The online forum. We're hoping that with the discussions on our website, this could be up and going in June rather than April. And then, again, in 2014, highlight new techniques that we're using for public engagement. We'll likely do the first one in May on that, and then later in November. And then the targeted annual surveys, we've not yet started. Those aren't until later this fall. Number seven is completed, the State of the County Address. I know, Paul, you spent some time in this room reading it. It's available in online and audio format as well as written format. Number eight, response mechanism and guidelines to respond to public inquiries. That's part of the website review, and that is ongoing. We've discovered there's some ways to use the form center in our Civic Plus program, our website that we weren't aware that we could do. So in the example of floodplain management, we've created a floodplain inquiry form that people can fill out and it'll self-populate. It's just a building awareness of what we can and cannot do in Civic Plus. And so that work is ongoing. Number nine is the creation of the Speakers Bureau. In again, shortly after the communications plan was adopted, reached out to elected officials and department heads, have a general idea of those county staff members that would like to be involved in Speaker's Bureau, put together a core presentation for the Board of Supervisors to use, and beyond that, we haven't really reached out to the civic groups to schedule the presentations. Time has been the issue, finding staff time to do that, but those two things would be modified for May and then June. And if you see the circle. And then the presentations would go June to December, and basically ongoing at that point. The op-ed column, the first one was done with the State of the County address. The second one will be done in May in combination with the... Sorry, I don't know what that is. In combination with the Our Story release. Podcast was envisioning a question-answer forms. Again, time was the issue with this one. March just did not allow us to put together this type of podcast, and so that we would recommend starting that in June. Community meetings with other governing bodies. If you'll recall, the county is divided into four quadrants. We would recommend pushing those scheduled meetings back starting in June rather than May. In the spring, we're going to have farmers in the fields, and I think it's really difficult to get the attendance we would like from township clerks, trustees and clerks and other interested parties if we're starting in May. So all those, rather than May, July, September, November, would be June, August, October, and December accordingly. And then printed poster, printed media, and signage campaign. We've identified those programs to include, and then the other two elements are well underway. Can't say they're checked yet. We haven't designed the media and printed everything, but those will be meeting the time frames. And with that, I'll be glad to answer any questions.
Talk just a little bit about your time commitments and that of your staff for this communications plan.
Right. As the board knows, this is part of our work program, our adoptive work program. Time commitments, I wish I could give you a definite, I spend an hour a week on this, I spend 2 hours a day. I don't have that. I'm towards the end of the month when I'm doing the newsletters, then it's probably a little bit more, to be quite frank, that does not take a large time commitment to draft the newsletters. There's time commitment on the part of other staff beyond planning and development. This past county news, which our internal newsletter, facilities management wrote an article, Department 101, just what is facilities management. I don't know how much time they took to write that, but I think what we found, I've been receiving very positive feedback from county employees, in particular regarding county news, our internal newsletter that we've brought back, that they've appreciated getting to know one another, know more about the departments that they've been here for years. You'll see, though, the other duties that are in our department, the responsibilities, because we were charged with bringing forth this communication plan and making sure that the time frames are met. The reason we're here today is our time commitments have been such that we haven't been able to do as much as we'd hoped to.
Right.
And that's why we're suggesting amending it.
Well, I think it's important to keep in mind that this was a guiding document to it help in the planning process of looking at the various components that we wanted to accomplish. And realistically, it's most of those types of things, since it involves so many different components, it's very difficult to stay strictly to that time element. What I would think that you might want to consider, and maybe you have, is identifying, prioritizing what are the top three or four within this 3 month time period that we want to definitely make sure that we do in terms of meeting your stated objective, and trying to maybe attack it from that point, and then some of the others, if we have to adjust down the road, we can. Because as I was looking through all these in the time frames that are here, you know, unless you can bring other staff members on board to assist you and have some type of internal training where you can get the necessary resources, it's putting an awful lot on your shoulders and your staff's shoulders to be able to do this, because as you found out in the newsletter, it requires coordination with other folks. and they need to have and they need to be dedicated to realize that by taking that time, there's going to be some benefit to it. And that's what I saw in the newsletter and why I commented to you this morning that how impressed I was as I started reading through that. I said, it wasn't like most little newsletters you get with just a little blurb here and there. I mean, there were some real insightful stories about people's role and involvement in county government and how they came into play that was really refreshing, because I think it gave me a different appreciation perspective of who they are and what they do. And I think sometimes we tend to see the face and we know what they do, but we really don't understand all the facets of what it is and how critical what they do for the entire organization. And I think that piece became much more evident to me. And if we can continue that, I think it will open up other avenues where staff members may say, hey, you know, I'd like to maybe help out in this area. I can kind of do something like this. And this is similar to what we're talking about with our safety committee now, is trying to reach out and get more and more staff involved in that component.
I appreciate those comments, and I've experienced that in particular with the Lunch and Learns. I've had a lot of ideas brought to me from staff as to, hey, how can we possibly look at a program in this regards? You know, one that comes to mind is how we use different aspects of the Outlook program we use, Microsoft Outlook. The person asked me, how did you create your signature line, including the logo? Which it's we're not all trained on how to do that. And so simple things like that, I've had requests like that. And so the Lunch and Learns are crafted for us this year. So it's not a matter of having to do anything beyond just put the presentations together and identifying the persons to come in and do the presentations. The delay was all the other items on our plate, which I think we have prioritized, but we'll continue to do such.
And do you see the Lunch and Learn being strictly internal, just trying to really, okay, engage?
Yeah, the way the plan is set forth is for county employees.
Okay.
As a training opportunity for them to improve upon presentation skills, to get the tools and techniques necessary to continue growth in their current positions and future positions with Story County.
Well, that's appealing. And excuse me, I don't mean to dominate everything,
right,
Paul, but that was appealing to me because the visioning state that we just had the last time was really an eye-opening experience, because we had a lot of departments represented and a few other stakeholders from the communities to start in that process. And I think if any time we can get a collective group of people around the table and start looking at various components of what they do and how it could be done better or different, I think is a real positive thing, because, you know, we're thinking outside the box now. No one person is going to come up with all the great ideas. And I think that the problem we have sometimes is finding a time and then a commitment from us as supervisors and other elected offices to release a few hours or an hour and a half periodically, quarterly, that we can bring this group of people together to do these types of things. And I think that's doable, but I think that's something that we need to really start to take a look at as well.
I think it's all part of a learning process. This is something new that the county hasn't necessarily done before. And over the past 3.5 years, we've asked from more from Leanne and her staff, but in particular Leanne, than I think that probably has been in the past. And I mean, it is what it is. It's a plan. It's no different than the county's 5-year road plan. It's things go on, things come off. We make timeline changes to it. Like Wayne said, if you need to take the time and prioritize 3 or 4 things that you need to work on first, then that's what we need to do. But I think first and foremost, we need to look at your role as the planning and development director. And I know we've put a lot of stuff on your plate in the past, and as we continue to go, I don't foresee that changing much. So, but we'll like I said, it's a plan and evolves over time. And if we need to make changes to it as we see necessary, then that's our prerogative, and we can do that. So that's what we're looking for today is consent from this board to go ahead and make the timeline changes on that plan.
Yes, I certainly have that. And I guess, Mr. Chair, I would just ask Ms. Olson, since she asked a question, was her questions answered satisfactorily for you?
Okay.
All right. Then if there are no further questions, I would ask that we approve the revision steps that were mentioned in the communication plan, understanding that we will need to kind of pay close attention to this as we move forward in the future and make adjustments where necessary.
Exactly. I'll second that motion. If there is there anything further, Clinton?
Aye.
Toot, aye. The changes are approved. Thanks again, Leanne.
Thank you so much.
What I'll do is I will reprint a new copy for the board members and then available for the public as well.
I would like to say that, the information you shared with me for the county a day, it was interesting. I had several counties pick that up and said that they really wanted to take a close look at that. And I was particularly interested when Johnson County, who I think is kind of one of those that, you know, has a lot of things going for them, saw some real neat ideas that they hadn't thought of in there. So I think you and your staff and what we have started here has a potential to being something that other counties can look at and try to emulate as well. So I just wanted to pass that on to you.
Yep. Thanks, Leanne. Next is Youth and Shelter Services, Dr. George Valitzos.
Oh, George, go. Woo, woo, woo.
Good morning. We are, it's a pleasure to be here on a rainy, damp spring day. We love the rain. Filling my well back up. The more, the better. We're here to give our quarterly report and to, once again, thank the Board of Supervisors for their support of YSS and our mission through asset and through juvenile court funding. I'm going to hand out our quarterly report, and it's 2 pages. And before I do, let me introduce who is my aide today. This is a new YSS staff member named Megan Bagley. We have a public information officer position, similar to the things you just heard about. Trying to get the word out about what we do and communicate to the public the importance of the services that we provide and try to get those in need to walk through the door. So that's Megan's job. We had a gentleman, Eric Carlson, for almost 10 years in that position. He's moved on. Megan comes to us from ACE Credit Union. They just merged with another credit union, and Megan's been there for 6 years, and so she's now at YSS. She has her degree from Iowa State in marketing. So if you'll hand those out, I'm going to hit some highlights of her quarterly report, and the only thing I'm going to highlight are the services that have already exceeded all of last year. So this is as you know, this is a 9-month report. We come here quarterly. So if you look at the first one, Rosedale Shelter, all of last year we served 58, during the 12 months of last year, 58 Story County youth. And for the first 9 months of this year, we're already at 64. And look at the big increase in the number of days. Remember last year we were concerned because there used to be five shelters in central Iowa. 3 of the 5 closed. So we were getting a lot of kids from outside of Story County. We have really put a focus on serving local needs, and it is paying off, and I think we're doing a great job. Also, look at the second line there, kids who came to Rosedale or called Rosedale or their parents did through our crisis line and wanted to enter Rosedale and were diverted and returned back home or to a relative's home. All of last year it was 54, and so far in the 9 months of this year it's 60. Jump down then to our Lighthouse program. That's our transitional living program. Wayne, you and I heard a little bit about that yesterday because the Ames school system had a report to the Ames Rotary Club about the growing homeless youth problem in our county. So already we have met the numbers that we had for all of last year. Jumping down to the counseling program, we have we served in individual counseling all of last year, 126. It's already at 104. We exceeded the number in family therapy by almost 20. That's the next line. The number of assessments is equal to last year. Then we do substance abuse toward the bottom of the page, and we jump to 90 so far this year, and all of last year there were 77 in our outpatient program. Then go to psychiatric services. As you know, we took up the pediatric or adolescent and child psychiatric services when the Richmond Center reduced their service, their psychiatric service. And for all of last year, we saw 109, and it's already at 207. Assessments, all of last year, 153, and we're already at 221. Turn the page, and you'll see now on our prevention programs, the number of mentors is that have been matched to kids is at 191 for Story County. All of last year there were 180 matches. This, by the way, is National Volunteer Week. Just want you to know that we that volunteerism is a backbone of YSS. We have four volunteers, active volunteers, for every one staff member at YSS. This evening, Story County is celebrating its volunteers out at the Memorial Union and giving out awards through the Volunteer Bureau. And there's age groups going through college and then up to seniors. And YSS nominated four different volunteers, and all four of ours were picked to get recognized because of their extensive service and dedication. The youth employment program has exceeded the numbers for all of last year, and finally the Gilbert Kids Club has already exceeded the total number of kids served last year. We're at 108, and all of last year was 105. So needless to say, we are busy at YSS. I'm going to give real quick the Rosedale Shelter report, since we started with that, and we are celebrating Shelter Awareness Days. Shelter Awareness Days were Shelter Awareness Day was organized by Mary Culver. That was the thing that she had dedicated her time to as First Lady. Now. 4 years ago, and she just got us going in this celebrating of Rosedale Shelter, which, as you know, is the first emergency shelter in the state of Iowa. We're going to have a program on new trends in child welfare emergency services, and we're also going to recognize our funders and supporters, the main ones, and that puts you at the top of the list. You were Story County Board of Supervisors started funding YSS even for the shelter even before we were incorporated. It goes back 40 years. And we want to recognize the Board of Supervisors and all of your predecessors for the continuing support. So we would like to invite the three board members and Paul, if you're available, if you could come up and accept it for the board and say a few words, would really appreciate it. Great. And everyone in the room is welcome to come. We'll have an open house at Rosedale. We'll have a big tent out in back, and rain or shine, we're going to have a great event. We're going to have some of the youth talk. Two really neat. We have two youth who went through Rosedale as kids who now have finished college and are working there. So they're going to talk about their experience. And then we're going to have two from the shelter who are there now also speak. Next, I want to let you know we had a very successful Risky Business Conference. We had 525. It's lower than last year. However, the oddest thing happened. Another one of the few existing statewide conferences, the Governor's Conference on Substance Abuse, moved their date to the same date as ours. Some of our own staff couldn't go to Risky Business because they had to get CEUs at the Governor's Conference. We still had a good turnout despite that. And I'm going to let you look through the photos. We had over 100 AMP kids attend, and they had a major role in the youth voice at the conference. I would like to turn my attention now to the legislature and then to the ordinance, electronic cigarette ordinance that the board is pursuing. I want to thank the board for having the two public hearings. I think a lot of good education took place on the dangers of electronic cigarettes. I think that the ordinance, the broader ordinance that the county attorney has come up with, is a much better ordinance for us. Now, what has happened since your hearings? Earlier or late last week, the FDA, after 3 years, has finally announced their rules for electronic cigarettes. It's a big letdown. They have a 75-day comment period. We will be commenting. It really is very weak what they're doing. All the national groups have come out against it. In the meantime, the legislature has still been chipping away at Herman Kornbach's bill, and yesterday it passed the Senate. It was a split vote, but it did pass. And the important thing for all of us here in Story County to know, it really is a much improved bill, very much like what the county attorney has for a definition of these vape devices, these electronic devices. As you know, the county attorney's definition of the device and banning it from the sale to minors or possession by minors. That device could you are not allowed to obtain that device whether it contains nicotine or not. It's any vape electronic device. As I reported to the board, all kinds of other things are being used for vaping, including liquid marijuana. That's the big growing threat. Here again, liquid marijuana, it's high concentration of THC, just like it's a higher concentration of nicotine. You can't smell it. You don't know that's what they're using. And it's very, very, it's going to be very tough for law enforcement. What's great about the ordinance that you're pursuing is it would include the devices themselves. It didn't matter whether it contained nicotine, marijuana, or anything else. That's the bill that passed the Senate. Now it's on its way to the House. Yesterday, it was a split vote. I think most of the Republicans voted for it. 11 Democrats did not. The governor has come out in support of it. He said he would sign the Senate version. It's much stronger than the House. Now we'll see what the House does. They're taking it up today. It may or may not pass. They had already passed their bill, but they're not sending it to a conference committee. They're asking the House, to just look at it as is. So I think by the end of today, we'll know whether you need to proceed or not. And forget about the FDA. If the legislature doesn't pass an ordinance, don't think the FDA is going to do what we want. We much rather have a local ordinance. And I again commend you and thank you for being so concerned with our young people and public health. Another bill that passed was a bill strengthening the human trafficking laws. As you know, Story County has become a leader, and our AMP youth have become leaders in promoting the anti-human trafficking cause. We would like to eliminate human trafficking in Iowa. And there have been over 200 human trafficking cases in Iowa. 80% of them have been minors, and 60% of them have been kids in the foster care system. And the spokesperson for the whole state is a Story County kid, Brittany, and she lives in Story City with her adoptive mom and family, and she moved from 14-year-old victim of human trafficking to survivor to statewide spokesperson. We're very proud of her. Attorney General's office has given her a citation certificate of recognition. Last Thursday, when the governor signed the bill, Brittany was by his side, and she got the first pen. So I'm very proud of our Story County youth and our AMP youth. So I'll ask Megan to show off these great photos. I'm really proud of our kids and of AMP.
George, if I may ask, just on this subject, and I just want to acknowledge that I'm sure that you guys may have received the email that Laura sent that just raised some what I thought was some very good questions that needed to be part of the conversation regarding the criminal aspect of this as far as parents. Has the Policy Prevention Board had a chance to discuss this, or is this something that you guys are going to be discussing? And I'm just curious as to how we can incorporate that discussion, because I think it's an important discussion.
It is.
That needs to be, you know, factored in.
I did read the letter to the editor that Loris had in the paper. I think she made some very good points. Oh, it wasn't in the,
no.
Where did I see it?
It was online.
Oh, it was online. That's where I read it. Okay. I think you made some very good points. And it has not been discussed at the Prevention Policy Board yet. But I think it needs to be researched more.
Thank you.
Yes, you're welcome. Last thing about human trafficking is that YSS has initiated a Central Iowa service network against human trafficking. Our next meeting is May 9th, which is a week from this Friday, 1:30 at the Jacobson Center. And I want to invite the board to come and learn about human trafficking in Central Iowa. The main presenter will be from the Attorney General's office, talking about how we need to work with local law enforcement, with the domestic abuse shelters, how we need to all come together to fight human trafficking in Central Iowa. I think it's going to be a really good meeting, and I'd really like to see the Board of Supervisors there. So it's next Friday, May 9th, 1:30 at the Jacobson Center. Now I'm going to also just leave this with you to keep. This is the FDA rules. I mean, you go online to get them, but this is a summary. We are seeing a lot more prescription drug abuse among young people. Many of them are abusing drugs that they find in their own home or the grandma's home, and we continue to try to get these drugs removed from the home and that aren't being used any longer and dispose of them. And we're having drug drop-off in Story City and in Nevada. And this is a little copy of the information about when and where that I'd like you to keep. And then I'd also like to ask you if you would post this somewhere in the courthouse for local Nevada and Story City people to know where the drug drop-off is. So give that to Paul, if you would. Thank you. Wrapping up, I just wanted to share with you, last week we had, you know, YSS has spread throughout central Iowa. We had a big event in Des Moines where we just bought a new center in the heart of downtown Des Moines. It's right on the skywalk. It's going to be called the Youth Opportunity Center for homeless youth and street youth in downtown Des Moines. And this is an article about our kickoff event. We're raising money. We bought the building, and we bought it free and clear. We have no debt, but now we are raising money to remodel it. And I just want to reassure you that all the money that we're fundraising for will be coming from people in Polk County and in particular in Des Moines. Going to invite Jerry Derner up here with me, and she's going to make an announcement about a new service that we have. You might remember I introduced you to Jerry Derner as our integrated client care coordinator, and she started in January, and she's really doing a bang-up job of integrating especially our psychiatric, mental health, and substance abuse care with the medical community. This is all the new direction under the Affordable Care Act. And so we are going to be starting up a new program, and Jerry is going to share it with you.
Hi. The program is called Integrated Health Home, and the first thing we're going to do is dump the word home, because this is not a home. And the word home is very, very confusing. So we're going to follow in the footsteps of some of our fellow peers around the state who have been doing this for the past few months. And we're going to refer to this as integrated health service. And we are very fortunate to come in on this new program in phase three, because we can learn from the people who have figured out a lot of the bumps in the road from phase one and phase two. We do not start officially until July 1, but we were offered the contract a couple weeks ago from Magellan, and we will be coordinating the integrated health services in Story, Boone, and Green, and the vast majority of the kids that we'll be serving will be from Story County. Just a quick oversight. As I said, this is not a home. It really is a strategy. It's a case management strategy. And there are only two rules for eligibility for kids to participate in this program. One is they have to be Medicaid eligible, because the funds do come from Magellan. And two, they have to have a mental health diagnosis with a serious emotional disturbance. This will include our Story County kids who are currently receiving the Children's Mental Health Waiver. And currently they get their case management services through Story County Community Services, and that will be transitioning to us. The IHH, or the IHS, as we'll call it, is a voluntary service. There is, its members are eligible to enroll, or their parents will enroll on their behalf. There is no cost to families to participate, and we as a provider will have a per member per month payment to us to manage their care. And then there are also some quarterly incentives. They're really trying to reduce the number of hospital stays, particularly in the adult population, and we're just going to be pediatric, but they're also looking at managing some of the chronic medical concerns. And I know that even my short time at YSS, I know we've got some kids that are, you know, pre-diabetic and have some other underlying health issues to go along with their mental health. And so those will all be some factors we'll be considering. the services will be provided by a team. Thank goodness I don't have to do this alone. And what makes this unique is that there are three distinct roles on the Integrated Health Service team. There's a care coordinator, and we've already talked about that person coordinating that case management to be sure that the child and family are getting all the services they need. But there's also an RN component. We want to have that medical expert on our team to help address some of those medical factors. And then kind of a unique position is that there is a family peer support specialist. And that person will be a parent who is successfully managing their child who has a serious emotional disturbance or some kind of a mental illness. And down the road, we're going to expect to enroll 500 or 600 kids in this program. And eventually, we hope that that will happen by the end of the year. We'll start out with small staff, and as our numbers increase, we'll increase our staff. But we will be expecting to have three full-time care coordinators and the equivalent of three full-time family peer support specialists. Now, given that those are parents actively managing kids with severe mental health issues, those will likely not be full-time positions because they already have a half-time job dealing with their kids. But we see that as a good opportunity to have more families involved, more people on a part-time basis that we can spread out geographically as well as experientially, because we know that not all mental illness is created equal, and that way we can probably do a better match-up job with some of our families with a support person that they'll be able to deal with or relate to anyway. So I do have a resource packet. Intentionally did not give it to you while I was speaking because I want you to listen to me and not fluff through papers. George asked me to prepare a handout. And because this is so new and we're not actually kicking off until July 1 or starting till July 1, what I'm giving you are three resources that we found really helpful as we've begun this journey that will help us understand. And some of it is philosophical and some of it is feedback from people who have already been there, done that, and have found it to be really beneficial. As I admitted or said before, the Integrated Health Home is designed for adults and children. We are only taking on the pediatric portion. Eyerly Ball will be the Story County provider for the adults who choose to enroll in this kind of a case management service. Our focus will be just on the kids because that's our area of expertise. The top page that I will give to you will tell you that we have had one community forum to help hopefully inform the community and the future participants of what's coming down the pike. We know that when you're dealing with folks with mental illness, there's a lot of anxiety, even if anxiety isn't one of your issues. So we want to do everything we can to prepare our community on what's coming down the road. And so we did have one open house community forum, and it was very well attended, and people asked a lot of really good questions. So we've scheduled two more, and so they're going to be on Thursday, May 15th at 2 o'clock in the afternoon and 7 o'clock in the evening. We wanted to offer two times so that people would be able to get there if they were, you know, working or not working. And it's going to be held at Community Life. And this really is a team effort between NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness, Eyerly Ball with the Community Mental Health Center, YSS, as well as Story County Case Management. So it really is a team effort. So I will give you that. I apologize. I only had the March announcement available, so you got my little hand scribbles on here, but Thursday, May 15th is the day. And so if you have a way to share this information, we would appreciate any support you can do. But just know that we're doing what we can to educate the public before this big change comes.
I would suggest you communicate that to Deb Gilroth, our CPC, to make
Deb's
sure.
Deb's the coordinator of this whole little thing, so
that
she's behind
aware
it
of that.
Yep.
And I wanted to also suggest that this may be something. She serves on the MHD Commission, and I've attended several of their meetings, and this will be, again, some additional information as we get up and running that would be good to share with the Commission. Because I think they are looking for positive programs to be able to help educate the legislators about why we need to really take a serious look at mental health issues impacting our youth. You know, we've been talking for years about the redesign of the whole system, and you just get cursory views about what's happening with the juveniles, and we need to really hold them to the fire in terms of what specifics are actually being done to address this issue.
Who should we contact?
I can check with Deb. The chairperson is going to be stepping down. I think they've elected the new chairperson at our last meeting. Well, I was just there as a member of the public. But we can get that so that perhaps you can get this on the agenda. But Deb can help you with that. Just tell her that I thought it might be a good idea.
Dentist?
Yeah, and I'd like to see it.
Any other questions?
To conclude our quarterly report, Laura Bell. She will speak on behalf of prevention programs, early intervention, GRIP mentoring, the Kids Club, and all the child safety programs and education programs that we have going in Story County. And as she gets ready to talk about mentoring, I want to thank Wayne and Edna for their role in the Chili Challenge. We
got a lot of publicity off of that. Everybody's asking for us to come over and cook for them.
I'll bet they are, because you have the best chili. You were the choice of the five competitors. And so we thank you again, Wayne, for your volunteer time. And we did raise $10,000 for our mentoring program. Hey, take it away, Laura.
All right, well, thank you so much, and good morning. As George was saying, the first annual Chili Challenge was a huge success, raising over $10,000, and we also would like to thank Wayne for his participation as our guest, Jeff. It was a great, great experience. This summer, they're excited to have the opportunity to provide summer mentoring programs in Ames and Nevada. We are working with the summer enrichment lunch programs, both in Ames and Nevada, to continue those matches over the summer. The Kids Club programs are continuing to be strong in their enrollment and their sites. They have new families joining each month, and year-to-date they have served 267 children in Ballard, Gilbert, and Roland Story School districts. This spring they have implemented a World in Motion curriculum, which is an engineering-based science curriculum, and they've received a World in Motion grant through the Governor's STEM Advisory Council. And then the Kids Club, as you'll see in the handout that I gave you, they are working this summer on their program for the summer called Big Ideas, a Summer of Incredible Inventions. So they will be learning about inventors and working on different inventions and working on their own inventions throughout the summer as well. Our Teen Club programs, they are working on their different service learning projects. Ballard Teen Club is working hard on their anti-bullying campaign as part of their summer, service learning project. So those individuals are working on filming a bullying awareness video, and they're going to be showing it to their fifth grade skills class. It's kind of interesting, these students, as they've been working on this project, they've been sharing a little bit more each time they meet and work, and they're deciding, you know, they're seeing that each of them, regardless, are experiencing different forms of bullying in their own lives. So they're starting to see each other's strengths, and they're starting to see what each student can offer to the project, and that's helping them not only build their confidence but also their leadership roles. And then the Collins Maxwell Teen Club is working on their service learning project addressing military. So they have a student who shared that his father has been in Iraq during two tours. He served in the military overseas. So he is kind of the impetus for this project. So they are working to send care packages to deployed military men and women, and then they're also going to be working to help military kids in the Collins Maxwell Community School District. So during quarter three, Ballard Teen Club served 34 youth. Collins Maxwell Teen Club served 23 youth. The Ballard Teen Club had 9 youth complete a total of 53.75 hours of service learning, and Collins Maxwell had 19 youth complete 24.25 hours of service learning. And then in prevention, as a tobacco control specialist for the county, I'm going to be a little biased here in my report. This is World No Tobacco Day. It's coming up May 31st. So this is a huge opportunity for us to create awareness, not just about the impact of tobacco use in our county and in our communities, but also worldwide. It's a huge, huge issue worldwide. A number of people that
are being impacted by tobacco use, and also a number of people that are potentially losing their lives early on because of their tobacco use. So encouraging people to, you know, seek out assistance through Quitline Iowa. Quitline Iowa offers a free 8-week supply of nicotine patch, gum, or lozenge to people who are 18 years of older. They also serve 13-year-olds and up. So it's just the 18-year-olds that can and older that can get those cessation benefits. We've also been training the Collins Maxwell Champs Youth Leadership Group and the Ballard Game Changers Youth Leadership Group in the American Lung Association's Teens Against Tobacco Use program. And so the Game Changers actually have already used those skills and those activities that they've learned to train 8th grade students. So they're already taking that on. And then we also had our Teen Maze event. So we served 964 youth and 87 adults during the week from Boone, Green, and Story County. So it was a huge event. It was a great opportunity and a great partnership with Kiwanis of Division 11, and then also Story County Medical really, really helped us out a lot in being able to provide that tobacco education with us to those youth.
And to finish up on the prevention program, there is a bill I wanted to call your attention to that did pass, that our Story County kids and our prevention program went to the state legislature. We had a press conference, and we, of course, it's our third year in a row, but this is the year the bill did pass. It's an underage drinking bill. It's House File 2310. The governor did sign it. In fact, last Thursday, same day as the human trafficking bill. Were you there?
I was not there, unfortunately.
We had a big role in this bill. What it does, it's also known as a social host bill. The bill has a pretty severe penalty for a homeowner or a lessee who has control over a piece of property and shall knowingly permit an underage person to consume or possess alcoholic beverage on said property. Any person who violates this provision commits a simple misdemeanor, first offense punishable with a fine of $200, and then a second or subsequent offenses are $500. It's now also illegal for a person under 21, unless they're at home with their parents, to possess alcohol. Before, the way the law read, it was consumption. You had to prove consumption. This is a big step forward in our estimation, and something we've supported at YSS for a long time through our public policy committee.
So help me understand, you said that this provision changes, so if they're under 21, they cannot possess it?
Yes.
So how do you enforce U of I and Iowa State University weekends and activities and all the gatherings that take place where we know that this is still going on? And I shouldn't exclude University of Northern Iowa, but I don't hear about, you know, them nearly as much as I do the other two. Yeah.
It gives law enforcement an added tool. The first offense, a person 18, 19, or 20 who's caught in possession of wine, beer, liquor, whatever it might be, alcoholic beverage, commits a simple misdemeanor punishable as a scheduled violation under the code and gives the section. But the fine is huge. It's $200 first offense, $500 second offense. That's the difference. That's huge. Big increase.
Have you thought about approaching the athletic department and just asking, you know, those folks to, again, work with trying to educate a lot of our young men and women? Because, you know, once it becomes a criminal offense, and even if it's a simple misdemeanor, these could have some other negative consequences as well. And I would hope that they would become leaders in helping to educate our student athletes as to, you know, not only is it healthy and protecting their health, welfare, and safety of the community, but I think it's something that needs to really be driven home by people like that in authority.
This is a great suggestion. We probably should let the VSHA study committee know about this, because this is really going to provide some new enforcement to break up these parties and to punish the people providing the alcohol. That's what started the last riot. Again, it was a home party that got out of control, spilled into the streets. With these kinds of fines,
the question's always been, what's the definition of possession? Right. I mean, if you're at a party and there's a keg of beer at that party, or there's cases of beer on the counter, are you actually in possession of that alcohol if you're in that house and you're under the age of 21? And I think that's always all my years at the sheriff's office, that was always what we struggled with. And they used to call it constructive possession. If you were in that house and the alcohol was there, you were in possession of it, and then they changed it where it had to be, you actually had to prove that they had consumed it. And now maybe they're going back to something that's easier to...
I think it is going to be a lot easier. I don't have a copy of the whole bill, but I know it's all spelled out. So we will pass that on to Iowa State.
Thank you.
Thank you for giving us all this time today. A lot going on at YSS. I think we're doing our best work ever. And as you can see, our numbers are way up.
Right.
Thank you. Thank you all.
Good. Mm-hmm. Great.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Next is Brett McLean with the report from Veterans Affairs. Morning, Brett.
Good morning.
Morning.
YSS is a
hard
act. Yes.
But you're up to the task.
I don't have any handouts or anything. I'm just going to go through here and give you some numbers and what we've been doing at Veterans Affairs. This report's covering January, February, and March. We assisted five veterans who came in with rent assistance, and that amount was $2,985.25. One veteran came in, needed help with utilities, $282. One veteran came in, needed help with transportation for $57.41. And then we had two families that came in for burial for their veteran, which was $3,540. And these were indigent veterans. Total assistance for the third quarter was $6,864.66. Under state and federal benefits, during the last quarter, we assisted 268 veterans and surviving spouses. 62 of them were original claims, and that is where we developed these claims for them and forward them on to the VA regional office for further decision from them. Eight claims were reopened for an increase due to the diagnosis being much worse now than it was when it was first granted service connection. And some of these went back over 15 years that we did reopens on. 25 veterans came in who had served during World War II. And some of them was their first time filing for benefits. They've been home quite a few years, but we're working with them and trying to get things going for them. 36 came in that served during Korea, and then 112 from the Vietnam War, 22 from Persian Gulf, 14 from the Cold War, and we had 44 who had served in Operation Iraqi Freedom or Operation Enduring Freedom or Operation New Dawn. 29, we were able to enroll them in VA health care, folks that just didn't have any health care. 36 came in to complete the new driver's license form, which allowed them to get the word veteran put on their driver's license. I think the biggest benefit there is we were able to help them with some other benefits. I'm not sure if the word veteran on your driver's license is going to help you out on a stop or not. I haven't tried that, so. But a lot of people have those now. Legislation updates. There's a couple of bills to talk about. Actually, last night our legislators passed Senate File 303. If this bill becomes law, it would exempt military retirement pay from Iowa tax. probably been down there 7 years in a row. So all the states around Iowa are have that same thing. And at the same time, the House passed Senate File 2352. This bill, if it becomes law, would eliminate property tax for veterans that are 100% with service-connected disabilities. Also, surviving spouses who are eligible for dependent indemnity compensation. And what that means is if they had a, if their veteran had died because of a service-connected disability, then they would also be included, as well as the Gold Star families. And this would be 100% property tax exemption. So those two bills now go to the governor for signature and final approval into law. And this is part of Governor Branstad's Home Base Iowa initiative. Office staff, we completed training April 15th, 16th, and 17th in Des Moines. And our Story County VA Commissioner opening that we're going to have, application deadlines will expire this Thursday at 5 o'clock. The board typically appoints a commissioner in June to start July 1st. And we've had this position posted for over 90 days, making a law requirement to make all efforts to keep the commission gender balanced. Upcoming events. Tomorrow night at 5 p.m., I'm hosting a Vietnam Veterans Meeting. And we're going to do that from 5 to 7 at the Story County Human Service Center in the East Conference Room, or where Community Services used to be. There, we urge all Vietnam veterans to attend. Not only are we going to talk about Agent Orange issues and the 15 diagnoses that are related to that, we're also going to talk about what it would take to start a Vietnam Veterans of America chapter in Story County. Roger Elliott, the state commander of Vietnam Veterans of America, will be in attendance to talk about that. May 7th, Vietnam Veterans Recognition Day. It's at 11 o'clock at the Vietnam War Memorial or Monument at the Iowa State Capitol Grounds. And on May 13th, Story County VA, we're going to have a booth at the Seniors Expo. That's going to be held at Ames at the Quality Inn Suites at 2601 East 13th Street. And that's going to start at 9 and go until 2. Memorial Day newsletter, doing something a little bit different. We're merging our newsletter with Boone County Veterans Affairs and Iowa State University Veterans Affairs. One thing by merging is it's we can share costs, and we're getting the information out to more veterans. Last year, we held our Story County Support Initiative, otherwise known as a homeless stand down. This is for people that are homeless or about to become homeless, not veterans, but anybody. It was so successful, we're planning one this year. It was requested that we do this one outside instead of inside. So we're looking at June 20th or the 27th. We've got our request in at Iowa State to use one of their parking lots after the students go home. So we don't know which day just yet, but it'll be all day over there. June 7th through the 14th, Luke and I will be attending the National Training for County Veteran Service Officers. This year it's going to be in Grand Rapids, Michigan, so that we can recertify as National Service Officers. Story County Freedom Flight, October 5th will be our send-off this year. We're still looking for World War II veterans and Korea veterans, and we have about 100 or more Vietnam veterans already signed up. But we're going to have our send-off program. It's going to be at the Ames Auditorium City Hall from 2 until 3 on October the 5th. If you've never seen one of these, here's your chance. Usually we have 800 to 1,000 in attendance. So come early to get a good seat. And I want to, you know, Wayne's been at, I believe you've been at probably both of ours, as well as our send-off. I know I seen him really early one morning out there.
The morning was a little tough to deal with.
You know, the thing about this, we leave so early and come home so late. A lot of the community, they don't see that. You'd have to be over by Iowa State about 5 in the morning or about midnight. So October 7th will be our Story County Freedom Flight. Currently, we have 3 World War II veterans. One of them will be 102 the day of the flight. We have 29 Korea veterans, 100 Vietnam, who served in country, and we have 32 Vietnam-era veterans. The 747 holds 162, so with 12 seats taken up by escorts, 1 to 2 of them are doctors. We have 150 seats available for our county veterans. To be eligible, you have to live in Story County at the day of application, or had lived in Story County prior to going into the service. And our application deadline this year is on July the 1st. That's all I have, Board. Do you have anything for me? Or
no.
Questions? Okay. I think so.
Thank you again.
Thanks for all the work you do.
You bet.
Renee Tweed and I we're blessed with a lot of volunteers. There's no way that, you know, her and I could do this by ourselves or... you know, and it's catching on. Cass County, they're doing one. Boone County wants some, you know, some pay it forward help, and Pottawatomie County. So it's kind of a catching on program, and it's just a great day for our veterans. Some of them, it's their first and last trip to D.C. So whether the government's, you know, last time we went, the government was closed. Whether they're going to be closed on the 7th or not, we don't know, but we're still going to go.
Stop you the last time.
Didn't stop us. We've still seen everything. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. That takes us down to liaison assignments and committee meetings. Wayne.
Pass.
Mm-hmm. I'll pass also. Public forum number 2, comments from the public on items not on this agenda. The board may not take any action on the comments due to the requirements of the open meeting law, but may do so in the future. Not see anybody move towards the mic. Announcements from the supervisors. Wayne.
No, I would just... about a week from now, on the 7th of May, I will be attending the National League of Cities Risk Conference in San Diego as a part of the trustees for the Iowa Municipal Workers' Comp Board. We have our annual meeting out there, and that's something that I always look forward to, and I will actually extend a couple extra days to take advantage of an area that I haven't been in a long time. So I will be out of the office, several days that Wednesday through the following Monday. I believe we'll be coming back on that following Monday. So,
and I don't have anything, so I would entertain a motion for adjournment.
So move.
Second. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. We're adjourned.